This is Voice of the Public, moving forward after the El Paso shooting. I'm Fred Martino. Last weekend, our community faced what so many others have endured, a mass shooting. 22 dead, more than 20 others injured. The physical injuries are just the beginning, as many are now expressing fear after learning the attack appears to be motivated by hate. El Paso Representative Veronica Escobar told KTEP, El Paso is coming together after the tragedy.
I am so proud of this community, the way that people have come out, waiting in long lines in the heat to give blood, reaching out to one another. That's El Paso. That's El Paso. And we have to keep doing that for one another. And to the families who are suffering right now, I am so sorry.
Beto O'Rourke used to hold Escobar's seat in Congress. He immediately suspended campaigning for the Democratic nomination for president after learning of the shooting, and he told KERA, El Paso will persevere.
I am incredibly saddened, and it is very hard to think about this. But I'll tell you, El Paso is the strongest place in the world.
El Paso Mayor DeMargo echoed those sentiments, telling KTEP, the city will not be defined by this tragedy.
Our community will not be defined by this senseless, evil act of violence. We will be defined by the unity and compassion we showed in the wake of this tragedy. United, our community will heal. El Paso is too strong to be broken by a cowardly act like this one.
All this week, people have been in mourning, but they're also speaking out, calling for gun legislation to ensure universal background checks and to reinstate a ban on assault weapons. New Mexicans came together at the Plaza de las Cruces in an expression of solidarity with the people of El Paso.
Scott Hagelin from Las Cruces. In my lifetime, this is probably one of the most devastating things that ever occurred. And if this is all I can do, or one of the things, the small things I can do to let the folks in El Paso and people around the United States know, you know, to give back something to them and let them know that this is just terribly wrong and that we all in America, all people, despise and loathe this action, and we want to see it end. God bless you all. We love you, and we're here for you, and I hope over the coming months we're all able to do whatever we need to do to make them feel better.
Late Thursday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced the Senate would consider gun safety legislation, but he would not bring back senators early, so it appears action will come no sooner than next month. Earlier this week, Senator Tom Udall told me it's time for the Senate to take action.
There are gun safety bills that have passed the House of Representatives. They're sitting on the desk of Senator McConnell. The majority leader has the authority to bring them up. And a lot of us have said that we should come back into session and very quickly pass these pieces of legislation. The Charlottesville loophole is one that was passed by the House, and then also expanding background checks. So those are two that are sitting there and ready to go and to be sent to the president by the Senate. We also have a number of other measures that have been under consideration with hearings and a variety of inquiries and investigations. We should ban assault weapons. These are military-style weapons. They should not be used in civilian society. We should direct our federal law enforcement agencies to focus on domestic, often white, nationalist terrorism and preventing future attacks. We should ban high-capacity magazines, and we should fund gun violence research.
But now the question is, will Congress finally take action? Many doubt it, due to the powerful efforts of the National Rifle Association, a major donor to many Republican politicians. Earlier this week, Democratic Congresswoman Xochitl Torres-Small told me on the gun issue and others, it's also important for the Senate to take on legislation designed to reduce the influence of money in politics.
Well, I've not only co-sponsored legislation to get rid of money in politics, I've voted for it and we've passed it in the House of Representatives. And that's yet another bill, H.R. 1, that the Senate needs to take up instead of letting die without consideration.
You are listening to Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. I'm Fred Martino, and we are so glad to have you with us today. We're going to be with you for the next half hour, starting a dialogue, moving forward after the El Paso shooting. We'd love to hear from you right now. Give us a call at 646-2212. That's 646-2212. Your thoughts on what you've just heard, the many issues that are raised by this shooting, including the issue of gun safety legislation. We heard yesterday, and it was a surprise at the end of the workday yesterday, that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell would indeed entertain gun safety legislation. But he would not do what many people are asking for, including the two people you just heard, Senator Tom Udall and Congresswoman Xochitl Torres-Small. He would not bring the Senate back immediately. He would take this up next month when the Senate is regularly scheduled to return. What will be taken, though, up in the Senate is a big question. What do you think should be done? We heard this week in El Paso during protests, and we saw on many signs people calling for much more than universal background checks. They're calling for an elimination of assault weapons in this country. This perhaps was one of the other big changes this week with these two tragedies, one right after another. In less than 24 hours after the El Paso shooting, the disaster in Dayton, Ohio, the tragedy there. And we learned this week more about Dayton. We learned specifically about the weapon used. We learned that in less than 1 minute, that weapon was able to kill 9 people and injure 27. And there were 50 more rounds of ammunition to go right before that killer was to go into a crowded bar. But he was, as you know, killed by police. And so that did not occur. Give us your thoughts right now on the shooting and how we move forward after this shooting. Call us at 646-2212. That's 646-2212. And we are welcoming now our first caller. It's Michael from Las Cruces. Hi, Michael. Michael, you're on the air. Michael from Las Cruces. We are going to go to you right now. Can you hear me? Michael from Las Cruces.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Michael.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for taking my call. Yes. What I would like to say is this is great that we're looking at gun safety legislation, that Congress is looking at taking it up. I am afraid, though, that we're going to run into the blocks that have always been thrown out before, which is the Second Amendment. And the reason I'm calling is to talk about the Second Amendment. All we ever hear about is half of the Second Amendment, which is the right of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed. They are completely ignoring the first part of that amendment, which says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of the free state. And I think that if the first part of the Second Amendment was enforced, all gun owners in this country collectively fall under the definition of a militia, which needs to be well regulated, and then Congress has the right to do the background checks, safety courses, mandatory safety courses before you can own a gun. And this, because it is being enforced under the Second Amendment, the fearmongers that it's just a ploy to come out and get our guns would be, they would be dismembered. So that's all.
All right, Michael, thank you so much for your call. We really appreciate it. If you have thoughts on how we move forward, Michael raising some very interesting issues there, we want to hear from you. 646-2212. That's 646-2212. And we're area code 575. I've heard from so many people over the last week about this issue, and we do want to let you know that joining us in a little less than 15 minutes, we're going to be talking with Miranda Vescoli. She is the co-president of New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence, and we do hope you'll have questions and comments for her, because in the absence of federal action on gun safety legislation, many states across the country have taken action on their own, including New Mexico. In January, the legislature passed some new background check legislation for the state of New Mexico. So action has been taken in our state. And as many of you have heard this week, many people are calling for Texas to take action at the state level, although it is very unclear at this time whether that will be done. If you are joining us today on Facebook Live or listening at krwg.org and you're not interested in calling us, we do hope you'll send your comments and your questions to us online. We do have the opportunity for you to share those comments on our Facebook page. And we have with us at the social media desk today, Morning Edition anchor Anthony Moreno. He has been monitoring what's been happening on social media, and we're going to join him live now to see if folks have added any more to the dialogue, either on our Facebook Live post or on our earlier post letting you know about this event today. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, Fred. Thanks for having me. I do want to let you know that there's been quite a bit of dialogue going on about this issue pretty much all week. Now, you started the program talking about how Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell will consider gun background checks in the fall. That got some response from our audience. We have Bev on the Facebook page who said that McConnell needs to go home. He is too tired to fight for our rights. And we also had a different response. Nolan on our Facebook page said, it's not enough. Ban military-style assault guns, as they used to be banned when it showed we had fewer mass shootings. So we want to invite folks to join in our Facebook page and continue the conversation at the KRWG Public Media Facebook page, and also give you a call.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Anthony. We'll check back with you again real soon. Right now, we have another caller. You can call us at 646-2212. Now we welcome Jay from Truth or Consequences. Hi, Jay.
Hi.
Your question or comment?
Yeah. I just got home and we turned on the radio and we were listening to this dialogue about what happened in El Paso and in the country. I feel like it's very, very, very saddening, you know, to think that something like this would happen.
Yes, and it certainly has been. I mean, all week long.
I just want to tell you a little bit about myself. I like nature. I love nature. I live for nature. You know, I love to go hunting, and I go hunting for deer, and I go hunting for elk, and I go fishing. You know, and I do a lot of things that a lot of people like to do that have rifles and have guns. I wish there was, and I'm glad we're having this dialogue, because because I'm pro gun, you know, but I'm not pro assault rifle, and I don't know where people think that the Democrats, you know, or you know, the people, you know, Congress, or you know, are trying to take our weapons away. I don't think they're trying to take our weapons away at all.
Okay, Jay, you know, and a lot of people make this point that a lot of folks who are hunters, a lot of people who have multiple guns in their home, they may have handguns as well as rifles and may regularly hunt, do not believe that the right to own a gun means that there are no restrictions at all. That, in other words, you can have an assault rifle. You can, you know, buy a gun without a background check. But we all know that that's the situation that we're in right now in this country, and that's why we're talking about this today, because there are different opinions on this. Jay, I have another caller. Any final thoughts before we let you go?
I just don't think Congress is trying to take our weapons away.
Okay.
I just don't think that, you know, we need to have background checks to protect, you know, innocent people, you know, in malls and, you know, and stores. And I just want people to, you know, to know that Congress isn't trying to take our weapons away. And more so, I like to say that I think we have a president in office. I don't even like to call him a president, because I feel like he's feeding the fire. He's not trying to do anything to listen to our concerns, to listen to people. And I just, you know, we're better. We're a better country than this. We're a much better country than this.
Okay.
And I hope people hear me across the oceans.
All right,
because,
Jay.
We're a much better country than this. And thank you for listening to my voice.
Thank you so much, Jay, from Truth or Consequences, for calling us today and sharing your thoughts on this issue, because it is so very important. We wanted you to share your thoughts as well and ask your questions at 646-2212. That's 646-2212. We do have another caller now. Doesn't wish to give their name, but they are from Las Cruces. You're on the air.
Yes, I have people in my family that own guns. I am not a gun person myself. I think that we do. I thought we already did have background checks, but I am totally against that red flag thing, because a neighbor could be angry with somebody and turn their name in, and that's would be wrong.
Okay, and we should explain to people, when you say that red flag thing, what you're talking about, for folks who are not familiar with that. There has been discussion of possible legislation, both at the state level in Texas and also at the federal level, to have what's called a red flag law, which would allow guns to be taken away from someone when they are deemed to be a threat to themselves or to others. And so this is something that has occurred in some states, and some people are strong advocates of it. In addition to mentioning that issue, do you have any other comments? We have another caller waiting and want to give you a chance if you had anything else you wanted to say.
Yes, that red flag thing is subjective. That depends on the person that is making that decision.
I understand, but it is put before a judge, and so it isn't just reporting it. It's actually evaluated. We do appreciate your call very much. If you have a call, if you would like to talk about a particular issue or ask a question, we invite you to do so now at 646-2212. We are joined now by Corta from El Paso. Hi, Corta.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
You raised a couple issues, the gun control issue and the limiting money from political campaign issue.
I was going to address the second issue first, and that is that to the extent that advertising, political advertising, is limited by, let's say, how much money you can spend, that measure, that law, would necessarily be a prior restraint of free speech, unfortunately. But this is what I think the ACLU, why the ACLU does not support McCain-Feingold. I don't know the exact wording of that ordinance, but I'm not sure there's any way to do that as a means of leveling the playing field. On the other issue about gun control, it is possible to, we have the technology available to manufacture an RFID chip that would be placed in machine guns, let's say, or any weapon that was designed to wield indiscriminate deadly force. And that would give the owner's name of the gun, the GPS coordinates, when it was fired, or it would also measure as it was being fired. This is already within the realm of our ability to manufacture, so that could be done without affecting the current status quo of background checks. Of course, the identity of the gun owner would itself be a type of background check.
Yes, and so this is a very important point you raise. It hasn't been discussed for some time, the notion of so-called smart guns. There had been discussion of that to ensure that if someone owns a gun, that only that person is able to discharge the gun and that the use of the gun can be tracked. So we do appreciate your call. Thank you so much for calling in and joining us today. And I want to let our listeners know that when you call in now, you'll also be able to talk to Miranda Viscoli. She is the co-president of New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence. So you can call us now to join the conversation with her. She is on the line with us right now. Miranda, it is good to have you here.
Good to have you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we have been taking a number of calls already during the hour, and I want to remind our listeners who are just joining us that they can call in and join the conversation at 646-2212. And Miranda, to start with, I want to ask you a little about New Mexico. I mentioned earlier in the hour that this year the New Mexico legislature passed some very important legislation. Let's start there because none of us at this point are sure what will happen at the federal level, but we know already there has been some progress made in New Mexico.
Yeah, so we had a really good legislative session. Sadly, in New Mexico, we literally do not have that many gun laws, and so we passed a background check bill that requires everybody who's purchasing a firearm to get a background check, which to me seems pretty fair. And then the other bill we passed was getting guns out of the hands of domestic violence offenders under a protective order. So what happens is the judge makes a finding of domestic violence, so there's due process, and if they're placed under a protective order, they're not allowed to have a gun while they're under that protective order.
And that's such an important point, because when you look at gun statistics, every day in this country, we have shootings that are domestic shootings, whether that be among various family members or whether those would be suicides. And it's part of the discussion about gun safety legislation, correct?
That's correct. And one of the reasons why New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence worked on that specific piece of legislation, it took us 5 years to pass it. The Governor Martinez vetoed it, was because we were looking at the high instance of domestic violence homicide or intimate partner homicide in New Mexico. And what you also saw was oftentimes the shooter was not only taking, it was usually a man, sadly, was not only shooting his wife, but also shooting the children. So we thought that this was an important piece of legislation to go after.
Let's move to what else needs to be done in New Mexico. This is going to be discussed, I believe, for some time because next week, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has actually called for a summit on domestic terrorism, and I'm sure guns will be part of that. So in your view, what else needs to be done in the state of New Mexico?
I think what would really be important right now is for us to get the extreme risk protection order passed. A lot of people, you'll hear this in the news right now, are calling this a red flag bill. We don't use the term red flag because you're stigmatizing people suffering from mental illness. But in terms of suicide prevention, these ERPO bills are lifesavers. And they're also can be a lifesaver in terms of mass shooters. Many of the mass shooters we've had in the past 2 years, had there been an ERPO law in place, it would have been much more difficult for that person to get a firearm. And basically what happens with an ERPO bill is that if somebody knows someone who has firearms and has a substance abuse problem or an anger management problem or showing violent tendencies, but there's nothing on their record to prohibit them from having a gun, they can petition to the courts to have that gun removed until things even out. When you look at the Parkland shooter, it was a perfect example. This kid had the mother had, obviously before she died, had called the police something like 70 times because he was so angry and violent. She never pressed charges because it was her son, right? And so then when he went to go live with this other home after both of his parents had died, they were very concerned about how many firearms he had and how angry and violent he was, but there was nothing they could do to remove those guns. So an ERPO law would have made it so that the police could have gone in, they could have petitioned to the court to have the guns removed.
Such an interesting issue, and I'm sure many of the people listening are not familiar with those laws. I was thinking this morning when I was watching a newscast and hearing that the mother of the shooter in El Paso had notified police there that she was very concerned that
that's a perfect example.
Yeah, that he had an assault weapon, and because of the nature of the discussion, the police did not follow up on it. And so, you know, this hopefully will be part of the dialogue about making sure that when someone would take that extreme step to call a law enforcement about a family member, even if the discussion that occurs isn't specific in nature, that the police have some kind of direction on what they should and can do, right?
Right. And what if had we had an ERPO law in place in Texas, that mother could have petitioned to the courts and said, my son should not have this gun. I am deeply worried. So, again, it's another example of how those extreme risk protection orders are really important. And I also need to clarify that it's the Gabby Giffords group, which is a fantastic gun violence prevention group, who is really pushing to get the ERPO bill passed.
Okay.
Here in New Mexico.
Well, we are talking with Miranda Vescoli. She is the co-president of New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence. We have a caller on the line now, Marilyn from El Paso. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, how are you doing there?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm very sad. I'm very upset.
Yeah.
And I 3 points that I'd like to make briefly.
Yes.
Number one is regarding a well-regulated militia. We have such a thing. It's called the National Guard.
Okay.
Number two, calling the Congress back. The Senate is the body that needs to go back, and they need to go back now. Let their lives be disrupted. Let them see photographs of the dead people.
Mm-hmm.
Let them see photographs of the crying children who will never get their parents and their grandparents back. And number three, security. We have to stop waiting for the Senate and the legislation to act. And we have to, in our cities, our city and county governments have to start passing rules and regulations, permits for businesses, malls, big box stores, movie theaters, outdoor festivals. They have to have security in these places. Well-trained, well-vetted security, smart security, not necessarily people standing around with guns, but people who are watching and who are capable of dealing with an issue that comes up. well-trained people who know how to face down a shooter with an automatic weapon. If we don't do this, I'm sorry, every other city in the county in the country is going to face this. And the copycat people are out there. The haters are out there. And we have to be smart about this and not put all of our eggs in one basket of, you know, the U.S. Senate or our legislators that are not willing to act. We have to have security. We are sitting ducks every single day, every place we go, unless we have better security.
Marilyn, thank you so much for sharing those thoughts, and I wish you the best in your healing. This has been a tough week for everyone in our community. Mm-hmm.
Thank you
very much. Miranda, thoughts on that? You know, this is something, we had another shooting, amazingly, right before the two in El Paso and Dayton in California. And she raises this question of big events and the need for protocol and a security.
I think sadly she brings up a good point. Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't think anybody in this country now goes to a big event and doesn't wonder if there's going to be a mass shooting. I mean, but sadly, I mean, we've set it up so we have to live in that kind of a society, and it's sad. Do we want? I don't think anybody wants to live in, you know, live like this, but she's right. We need more security. We need more police officers who are well trained.
And that training,
who know how to de-escalate, not just start shooting. That's important, and that's gonna cost a lot of money. Yeah. And that's where it goes back to the legislature, sadly to say.
And I was thinking about that training this week too, because with the fact that we had such good security cameras in Dayton, we were able to get to the second information about police there and the amazing work that they did, that there could have been so many more deaths, but they're obviously very well trained, and hopefully that will be part of the dialogue as well, because this is unfortunately for now the situation that we are in where we live, as you point out, and there is the means to get incredibly dangerous weapons. We want to continue the discussion with our audience at 646-2212. That's 646-2212 on social media. Many people expressing the idea that it is important to talk about this as a public health issue. That is what we're dealing with here, and we appreciate that contribution on social media. Very quickly, before I go to our next caller, we heard from a caller there who expressed the sadness that many of us are feeling, and I did want to make sure that folks know that there is a crisis hotline available to you. This is a free service, and it is from the Emergence Health Network. It's 915-779-1800. That's 915-779-1800. If you are struggling with grief from the week's events, you can call that number. There's also free counseling being offered at various locations by Emergence Health Network through August 23rd, and all of those locations are at emergencehealthnetwork.org. Our next caller is Bob from Las Cruces. Hi, Bob.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Bob.
Okay. Every time we have an incident such as Parkland, Las Vegas, this week, Daytona, and El Paso, we hear our leaders, the 535 of them that are up there in Washington, and they come forth with all kinds of things that we need to do, we need to do, we need to do. But I think a lot of people, and some of the things they want to do are very controversial. Our leaders in Washington don't like controversial things because they're going to have to vote against doing something the right way. The people of the United States, I think, sometimes forget that the number one priority of those 535 people in Washington is to get reelected. Take the Senate as a body, 100 individuals representing 350 million people. They are elitists. They act like elitists. In order to get reelected, they need money. Where does the money come from? It comes from the special interest groups through the lobbyists. I could go on with some other things that go on.
You're raising Bob some very important points here, and I want to put one of them into perspective for you and for our audience here. When we talk about money and this issue, this is a critical issue. We covered it very briefly in our first half hour, but I want to give you some specific data now. This is about the National Rifle Association. We often hear about their enormous political power due to not only grassroots action and corporate lobbying, but also due to money, due to contributions. In the 2018 election cycle alone, direct contributions to candidates for federal office totaled over $873,000. But this is just the beginning. So there was also outside spending by the NRA of over $9.5 million. So spending, when I say outside spending, that is outside spending not directly to campaigns, but very often spending that deals with campaigns. And when you look, when you drill down the data and you look at that money, that $9.5 million, again, this is only the 2018 election cycle. Most of that money was spent to either do advertising against a Democrat running for office or for a Republican running for office. So we're talking about an enormous amount of money, more than most issues in our country in terms of the direct contribution rank. They rank about 543 out of over 19,000 other groups making contributions. And on the outside spending rank, they rank 21st out of 243. So money is important.
Can I make a point?
Yeah, sure, sure.
In terms of the NRA, with the NRA, it's not just money. It's how they threaten our elected officials.
Okay.
And so if you look at what happened in Colorado in 2013, they had a recall that ousted two Democratic lawmakers for passing gun violence prevention legislation. We have in New Mexico four national NRA board members, and I can promise you that those are elected officials. Some of them that are in those areas are afraid that the NRA will come after them, and so they just pay absolutely no attention to the safety of our people. And I think Bob brings up a really good point that their job, our elected officials' job, their number one priority is to keep us safe and to effectively respond to the needs of our people. And they're not doing that. They're responding to the needs of the NRA either because they want the money or because they're scared that they're going to get ousted. And that's the reality of it. And when you look at what's happening in New Mexico with the sheriffs and the NRA, who are you know, both in bed together, the Brady campaign did a public record search that showed that the NRA and the sheriffs were working to pass these bogus sanctuary, Second Amendment sanctuary cities across the state. We have now 26 counties in the state of New Mexico that are saying that they refuse to uphold the law, and that was all the NRA and the sheriffs.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I've been in journalism for three decades, and this was certainly a first for me to hear after New Mexico passed the universal background check law in the state. To hear the top law enforcement officials in certain counties say, we're not going to enforce the law.
And
I mean, what was your reaction to that? You must have been stunned.
Oh, we haven't stopped fighting that one. This is ridiculous, and everybody should be very, very concerned. And we have to remember something very important. Sheriffs are elected. And if people are listening to this and they're mad, although Doniana County was one of the few, you guys have a great sheriff down there. she said, no way. But if you're in one of the counties that this was passed, call up your sheriffs and call up your city and county commissioners and say, this has to stop. They literally have in these resolutions where it says, may it therefore now be resolved that no funding will go toward towards these laws, right? And so that puts people in a very dangerous position. I mean, I honestly don't know why people in New Mexico are, no pun intended, aren't up in arms about this.
Okay. Bob, we have another caller waiting. Any final points?
Yes, sir. Earlier today, the president said that he was open to gun safety legislation on a bipartisan way. But he also said he had talked to the NRA, and the gun rights groups might not like what he has to say later on. He's famous for switching positions. Mitch McConnell is going to hold the Senate out of session until September, which means he's hoping some of this will go away. That's what the government always does. They put things off. It's going to go away. And finally, a prime example, he's out of office now, Paul Ryan accepted over $350,000 from the NRA during his term, and he never saw a bill that he could vote against. The NRA didn't like it.
Okay. So, all right, Bob from Las Cruces, thanks for calling in today, Bob. We're going to get to another caller in just a moment. I want to mention, though, before that, our phone number, 646-2212. And I also want to follow up really quickly on one other thing Bob said, which was the controversial nature of gun safety legislation. And I want to follow up on that for a very important reason. There are certain things that are less controversial than just about any other major public policy issue in our country. Even though you may hear the term controversial used. So I want to give you two specific examples. This is from a 2018 Pew Research Center poll. And what it found, and there are many other major polls that find very similar numbers, it found that in terms of background checks for private gun sales and sales at gun shows, it found when people were polled that nearly 9 in 10 folks, 85%, said that that was a good idea, that we needed to close that loophole. And we needed to have background checks for private sales and for sales at gun shows. 85% of people agreed with that. Not controversial in the scope of public policy. Not many issues where 85% of people agree. How about banning high-capacity magazines and banning assault-style weapons? Is that controversial? Guess what? Nearly 7 in 10 people agree with that. 67%. Nearly 7 in 10 agree. Again, in terms of public policy, Miranda, not controversial. There aren't very many issues where 7 in 10 of us or nearly 9 in 10 of us agree.
It's so true. I mean, believe me, I think about it every day of my life. And in terms of the assault weapons, you know, the what you hear constantly is, oh, assault weapons don't exist. You don't know anything about guns. Oh, I'm sorry, assault weapons do exist. And the velocity of those bullets, the reason why mass shooters choose them is because they are designed to kill as many people as quickly as possible. The bullet literally tumbles through the body and pulverizes the organs. And when you talk to surgeons who I have talked to who have literally operated on these bodies and said, how can these people, if you get shot with a hunting rifle, you actually have a pretty good chance of survival. It goes in one area and out the other. Assault weapons, they don't. They go in and they literally tumble and pulverize. Why do we want these on the streets? You don't need that for hunting, and you don't need that to protect yourself.
We have another caller on the line. We're going to join now Wade from Las Cruces. Hi, Wade.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Like, I just jumped in my truck and I heard you guys on the radio. And I've got a lot of things that I would like to talk to you about. But the last thing that I'm not sure who your other guest is here.
It's Miranda Viscoli. She is with New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence.
Awesome. So, Miranda, you need to educate yourself. That last comment you made about assault rifles or hunting rifles being different, that is absolutely incorrect. That is absolutely not even close to being the truth. And I get tired of people that think they know about things like this talking about it, but that's absolutely wrong. And I'll explain it to you, okay? I can put the same bullet in a single shot rifle as I can into what you people call an assault rifle. It doesn't matter what it comes out of. The velocity doesn't change. The bullet is the bullet.
I understand. Wade, I understand that's true, but in certain cases. But let me ask you something. You look at the Dayton situation, and you have in Dayton a pistol that had been altered to have 100 rounds of ammunition, and in less than 1 minute. In less than 1 minute, 9 people were killed and 27 people were injured, and he still had 50 bullets to go. Is that the kind of weapon that ought to be available to anybody who passes a background check? Let me ask you that.
We can talk about that if you want to talk about that. That's a totally separate issue. But whenever you get onto the phone and you're trying to tell people about velocities causing these assault weapons. I can't remember exactly what she said because I'm actually dumbfounded by it.
Well, what she said...
They pulverize the organs because of the velocity. They tumble through the body. Why don't you talk to the surgeons I've talked to?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the issue is that you know, these are weapons of war. And, you know, while there may be weapons, to Wade's point, where you may not have a high capacity
Can a musket kill that many people that quickly?
Yeah, well, exactly.
Can a musket kill that many people that quickly?
That's the question, and that's the issue. Wade, thank you very much for calling. You know, it is true. Wade makes the point. It is true that guns that are not high capacity are still very dangerous, but to essentially try to diminish the issue that assault weapons are not a concern, I think through one massacre after another, there are very few people who would agree with that idea. Miranda, you know, I have to ask you this question because I mentioned that polling information. When you talk about nearly 7 in 10 people who say we should ban high-capacity magazines and we should ban assault-style weapons, and it doesn't appear that this is even on the table at this point at the federal level, that the very best that might happen is a look at background checks again. Does this raise another issue for you that if this continues, that it really undermines faith in government? Because essentially the public view is not what's being done at the level of public officials. They are instead taking another view, taking the view of 30% of the public rather than 70%.
Yeah, and I think it goes back again to the NRA and what Bob was saying about wanting to get voted back in. I mean, so it's politics over people, right? And so even though the majority of people living in this country want a change today and not tomorrow, actually wanted a change, you know, years ago, aren't getting it simply because the NRA has such a strong influence over our political leaders, and like I was saying, not just with money, but their fear of not getting reelected is what's driving this, and it shouldn't be that way. Their job is to protect the people of this country, and they're failing miserably at that job.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to go back to our social media desk. Anthony Moreno of Morning Edition has been there, and he's been looking at our Facebook page. We are also streaming live at Facebook Live today. Anthony, what are you seeing?
Oh, well, we have an interesting comment. We have an interesting comment from Dylan, who has something to say about how these events are covered. Dylan says that he is advocating for the release of the images of those who have been struck down at Las Vegas, Columbine, and other areas. He cites that the work that photographers did during the Vietnam War help sway public opinion and perspective of the conflict.
Very interesting. That is not something that I'd have heard suggested before. But Anthony, you and I were discussing this morning the fact that I appreciated the opportunity as a journalist and also as a citizen looking at some of the journalism that dealt with the Dayton shooting and seeing the security cameras to get a better understanding of exactly what happened. That was informative for me.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. He's saying that this would make a difference. He says a picture, he says, quote, a picture is worth 1,000 words.
Okay.
I think she raises a good point. If you go back to remember during the protest during the Vietnam era, part of what changed that conversation was very graphic images on posters of what was going on, people bleeding, dying, rotting, and it had a profound effect. I mean, it's something to think about, but then you also think, do you want children to see those images? I mean, how you'd have to be careful with those images, and also the families and the loved ones. Did they want to ever see that? I mean, that's where I would be cautious in terms of using those images, because it could, really have a devastating effect on the people who lost their loved ones. I know I wouldn't want to see one of my family members like that.
Yeah, yeah, I understand that. Anything else to add there, Anthony?
No, we just have obviously some strong feelings about President Trump making the announcement that he will consult the NRA, and obviously more frustration with Congress not taking a break from their summer vacation, the Senate not taking that up now and waiting until the fall.
Okay. Anthony Moreno at our social media desk today. Anthony, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Miranda, this is a very interesting thing that is developing here. We did not late yesterday expect to hear from Mitch McConnell that he was willing to look at gun safety legislation when the Senate, gets back into session next month. And it's amazing the speed at which the response came. I mean, less than 12 hours later, President Trump saying today that he made a call to the National Rifle Association, told them, hey, look, you're not going to be ignored. He said, quote, your very strong views can be fully represented and respected. He tweeted, I'm the biggest Second Amendment person that there is. But we all must work together for the good and safety of our country. Are you fearful in our last minute here on the air? We have 1 minute left, that by this quick response already, that this might get let go. And if you fear that, what would change it?
Oh, it'll totally let go. And everybody has to remember what Donald Trump did after the Parkland shooting. What he's doing right now by saying he wants to pass gun violence prevention laws is working very closely with the NRA to sell more guns. Because that is exactly what he's doing. Because everybody's going to go, oh, no, now Trump is, he's going to start taking our guns or making it more difficult for us to buy them. This is a money-making opportunity for the NRA, and that is exactly what Trump is doing.
Okay. Miranda Vescoli, she is the co-president of New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence. Miranda, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Take care.
You take care as well, and we want to thank all of you who called in or joined us on social media today.